Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So, we've been talking on the program about women and their finances, and that is a very important topic. We also talk about longevity and the need for planning ahead, and we all hope to be blessed with a long life, and you want to enjoy those golden years, those retirement years, for as long as possible. You know, everybody wants to make the most of it. Well, we're going to combine those topics together and talk about aging, talk about longevity. There's a longevity revolution underway, and we brought in, well, she's a big deal. Maddie Dykewald is co-founder and senior vice president of AgeWave, and the website is agewave.com, just like it sounds. And she's also written the book, How Women's Soaring Economic Power Will Transform Our World for the Better. I hope it's so, Maddie.
So do I.
Welcome back. Maddie's been on the program before. I'm very excited to have her back with us. And so just to give our listeners a little background on Maddie, she's an author, speaker, AgeWave co-founder, leading expert on the changing demographic trends, generational, gender-specific, things affecting the marketplace, 25 years investigating and forecasting lifestyle and market trends of older adults, and the 79 million baby boomers that are retiring every day, some 10,000 of them. And so you're all over it. She's, of course, been on every media outlet I think that exists, Bloomberg, Forbes, Newsweek, Times, Fox Business, CNBC. I could spend the entire program telling you about all of her activities and accomplishments, but we're super happy to have her back on. So, Maddie, let's dive right in here if we can. Shock my listeners, catch them off guard, if you will, with something that they would be surprised about with what's happening with longevity and how it's stretching out just right in front of us, all the dynamics and things, and how it could affect what our world looks like as we go forward.
Well, that's a big question, David.
We have 4 hours.
And hopefully I can meet your expectations and your guests' expectations, but it's something that we don't really think about in our day-to-day lives. The fact is that 100 years ago, average life expectancy was only 47, and on average it's skyrocketed. It's gone all the way to 79. So in the last 100 years, we've gained 30 extra years of life. Now, think about that. That's like a big, I think of it as a longevity bonus.
Yeah.
It's 30 extra years of life that we need to figure out how to use. What are we going to do with it? How will we plan against it? Will we be able to work as long as we'd like to work? Will our health last as long as our life will last? I mean, these are just a few of the questions we ask, because it's really the beginning stages of a longevity revolution. And, you know, we can hear about these horrible diseases like Ebola, but the truth of the matter is we're living longer and hopefully better than ever before in the history of the world.
Well, if people are living on average, say, to 79, then what's happening to the definition of, quote unquote, old or really old?
Now, that is a really good question to be asking, because that's something each and every one of us have got to ask ourselves. But just to put it into a context of research, you know, our company, AgeWave, or my company, AgeWave, we do a lot of primary research. And we've gone out there and we've asked people of all ages to define what old is. And here's what we learned. We learned on average, most people think old is now defined as age 76. Now, that is unless you're older than 76, and then you think it's even older than you are. So, you know, it's a moving target. It changes. And I would say that chronologic age is one thing, but your health age is quite another, because we want to make sure we have a health span that matches our lifespan.
That's a great point, Maddie. And I see it, of course, every day, because I'm in the trenches working with retirees and baby boomers and folks that want to retire. And that's what consumes my work week. And I love it. Just joy. And one of the interesting things for me is I see so many different people that come in, and the dynamics are very interesting. I could have two appointments back to back with two 72-year-olds, and they could literally be worlds apart when it comes to their health age.
That's
and it's
right.
Really remarkable. And the financial impact, of course, on that is, you know, it's multifaceted. It is, you know, it's really remarkable. So I think that is a big part of it, and how people, how they live and what that means for planning for their future and for their retirement.
That's exactly right. I mean, the number one, I just wrote a piece about this for the Wall Street Journal. The number one thing that people identify as the key to happiness in retirement is good health.
Yeah.
And conversely, the number one concern they have, the biggest fear, the biggest worry they have about retirement is healthcare expenses, which is kind of ironic because, you know, you'd think, okay, they get Medicare. Why would they care about healthcare expenses? But I'm sure you realize this, and maybe some of your viewers or listeners realize this, but healthcare expenses aren't all covered by Medicare.
You're exactly right. And we will get to viewers soon enough, Maddie. We will. We will. We're working on
moving you into the future.
We are. You're already there. You spend half your time in the future. I know the truth about you. That's good. No, we're headed there. But I think you're right, and I think that that is a big question we get about healthcare. And part, in fact, a lot of people think that they don't even know or realize that they have to pay the Medicare Part B premiums out of their Social Security, and how much that is based on your income. And then you have to add in something else because that doesn't do enough and you need a prescription drug and you need maybe a supplement or you're going to be going with some sort of advantage plan. So, yeah, it's a big deal for people.
It's huge. And this one point that you didn't even touch on yet that makes it even scarier, and that is, and I don't want to scare people to death, but if you can prepare for these things, and frankly, talking to a great financial advisor is one potential way of doing that, but I'm not trying to do a commercial here for you.
No,
but,
go ahead.
I mean, but the point is long-term care is not covered by Medicare.
You're right.
And most people, more than 70% of all people will need some kind of long-term care at some point, and hopefully just temporarily, but at some point during their retirement years.
And you know what? All kidding aside, I do talk about that a lot with people. But here's my point when I talk to them. You don't have to get insurance. You don't have to.
No.
But what you have to do is have a conversation with me about it.
And you need to save. You need to have a fund, you know, a part of your retirement savings that is allocated towards that.
Amen. And you don't have to buy it. You don't have to get it. You just have to be proactive in talking about it. If somebody sits down with me and I explain to them the realities of their situation, and maybe they have enough money where they don't need to have the long-term care insurance, or maybe, like you said, they put a fund aside, whatever the case may be, just have the conversation and look at options, because there are a lot of options people don't realize. They think they have to pay premiums the rest of their life, and they may be able to make a single payment and be done.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know what's really interesting, David, is not only do people forget to talk to their financial advisors about these things, they also forget to talk to their spouse, partner, and other family members about these things. I mean, communicating about these issues is incredibly important.
It is, and it's something that, you know, people sometimes are uncomfortable talking about. But as we see this, and I don't think we're done with the extension of life expectancies. You know what it reminds me of is, and I don't remember the name of the product being sold. It was probably a car or tires or something. But where the road expands in front of you, it's like we're looking ahead and the road keeps getting stretched out like a cartoon in front of us. And we're nowhere near done. We may see a major shift and we expect to need the money for 10 years or 20 years. And all of a sudden we've got another 10 years. How's that change your finances?
It has a huge impact. And the most important thing people can do, and people ask me this all the time, you know, they said, I don't want to focus on the money side of things. I want to enjoy my retirement. And I point out to them oftentimes that I'm not a financial advisor. I'll point out, you know what, you can enjoy it more if you can raise the issues that are problems or potential problems down the road and have a plan in place for dealing with those problems. And then you're golden. You can have a great time.
And the plan is a great place to start. And I've told people this too. It's not a one and done. It's not a set it and forget it like the old Ron Popeil commercials. It's a process, and you will come back to it again and again. And you have to update it and you've got to adjust. And if, you know, you have to continue to keep it current. And in terms of going, you don't want to be bothered with it. You know, people might say that. Well, either make time to do some planning or you'll be making time to deal with the consequences of not planning.
And that takes a lot more money and a lot more time.
Yeah, and not as fun.
No, it definitely isn't. And, you know, here's the thing. For me, the point I always like to realize and communicate when I'm doing presentations or I'm having conversations with people like you, really important to realize that retirement is about a lot more than just the money. However, if you have your financial house in order, then all those other things become a lot more manageable and a lot more fun.
Amen to that. You know, it's funny. I had called one of my clients. You'll like this, Maddie. I called her and I was trying to have her come in and we're going to go over a couple of things. And she said, it was a few days before she got back to me and she said, oh, I just got in from Connecticut and I'm leaving to go to Paris. I said, okay, well, when you're back, let's catch up. And she goes, no, I'm good. You worry about my money. I'm going to worry about my flight to Paris. And I'm like, hey, but that's what an advisor's for.
Well, a good one, certainly.
Yeah, it's true. You only do that with a good one. Well, listen.
Yeah, someone you really trust. I would say a trusted advisor.
Amen. Amen to that. Maddie Dykewall is our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, co-founder and senior vice president of AgeWave, the website, agewave.com, and the book, How Women's Soaring Economic Power Will Transform Our World for the Better. Quick break. We'll be right back with Maddie.
Here's a newsflash. All financial advisors are not created equal. Some invest in their education by getting advanced degrees and professional certifications. Some don't. Some advisors get multiple licenses and offer a wide range of solutions. Some don't. Some advisors choose to be independent. Some don't. Some advisors disclose how they are paid and the fees they charge. Some don't. Please don't settle for a don't. Let me introduce you to independent advisor David Holland. David is a CPA, a certified financial planner, a personal financial specialist, and a chartered financial consultant. With 23 years financial experience, David offers a wide range of personalized solutions and discloses all fees in writing. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting.
And we are back. Maddie Dykewall is on the line with me, co-founder and senior vice president of AgeWave, agewave.com, and the book, How Women's Soaring Economic Power Will Transform Our World for the Better. And we'll look forward to that, Maddie.
Well, great.
And so
me
I
too.
Have a, But yeah, so I have a question for you. I think it's, you know, something that's being talked about a lot now, I think, in the current conversation about retirement and with the expectation of living longer, the idea of retiring at, say, 62 or 65 or 66 or somewhere in there, that seems to be, I think, loosening up. And people are kind of rethinking that because as we live longer, wouldn't that lend to the idea of working longer?
Yeah, it certainly does. And in fact, we've done a lot of research on this. I mean, the whole idea, retirement, it's not even a word that should be used anymore, but we're all using it. So, okay, I'll use it too. But it's being reinvented. I mean, the whole concept of it and the whole balance between work and leisure time is beginning to shift. And what happens, frankly, is people turn 62 or 65, and there's a few things that happen. Number one, they say, you know what? I don't want to do just play for the rest of my life if I'm going to be around for another 25, 30 years. Because,
right,
by the way, today, the average retiree is retired for anywhere between 20 and 30 years. That's a long time.
It is a long time.
Not include work. And which brings to the second point, you know, how am I going to afford,
right,
to live for 30 years on a fixed income?
Right.
That, no matter how wealthy you are, that's a complicated set of dynamics,
yes,
to try to. And third, I mean, do you want, what most people tell us, and we've done studies on this, is that when they think about why they want to work during retirement, they'll say, oh, it's for the additional income. But when you ask retirees, what do they miss most about working? It's not the money. It's the social connections and the mental stimulation. Those are the keys. And I would urge every single person who's listening to this program to really hear that. Because, yes, the money is great. You'll need it. You'll want it. It will make your retirement far, far more comfortable. However, the mental stimulation and the social connection will do even more for your retirement in terms of enjoyment and learning and growing into the future.
Amen to that, Maddie. I've already figured out I'm 46. I'm going to work at least 25 more years, and that's my plan. And then at that point, when I get to my early 70s, I may cut back the hours a little bit, but I got to come in at least one day a week just to create some problems and stir things up. But but no, I enjoy my work too much. I'm not going to stop at age 62 or 65 or 66, even if financially I could do that. It's a lot of fun. And you raise a really good point about the financial aspect. It's much easier to pay for those cruises or or other things that you want to do if you are still working than it is to have to draw. Because once you draw that money, especially if you have to pull it out of principal, it's gone.
Yep.
That's
yep.
it. And so that you've taken a chunk, unless you've done something to guarantee yourself a certain stream of income, that's going to be, that could create problems for you.
Absolutely. And living on a fixed income, most people don't like that so much. I mean, it's not as much fun as they expected. They worry about money far more than they did when they had income coming in.
Which is ironic because the conventional, and maybe it's just, you know, it's just kind of a marketed way of thinking about it, but what's been kind of propaganda or whatever we call it, that retirement life is easy, life is good, you know, it's all, it's the income's there. But the challenge, as you know, Maddie, is that when somebody retires, every day is Saturday.
Yeah.
And so
that could be difficult.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I have too many errands on Saturday anyway. But
well,
that's not even the point. The point is that, and you hit on it, David, because you said you still want to work, but you don't want to work as hard or as many hours. And that's what most people say. In fact, more than 60% of people tell us that they want to combine work and leisure in a new way in their retirement. So 80% of all people who retire say they want to work in retirement. Now, unlike you, not everyone loves their job. So some people want to do something different. They want to kind of reinvent who they are through work after they turn 62 or 65. And, you know, for instance, just to give an example, I have a friend who is a dentist who decided that he was going to go back to school and become a psychologist.
Hmm.
I know someone else who was a producer in Hollywood and decided he wanted to become a teacher because he wanted to give back a little bit more. I mean, he wanted to still make some income, but he didn't care what that number looked like quite as much. And the point is that for some reason, it opens up the possibility of trying new things and doing new, having a new purpose in life, frankly.
Well, that's really it. And that's what I've seen my parents do that. They continue to be active and do things and do different work after they left their previous positions. They shifted and got into other things that were things they wanted to do. So it's a good way to look at it. I want to do this, Maddie. I'm going to grab a break. We'll go to break a little early because I want to come back and hit on another major topic that I know that you've written about and you talk about, and that is how women's growing economic power, how that really will and can change our world. And I want to get into some specifics about that. So hold right there. We'll be right back with Maddie.
Okay.
Does getting financial advice seem like a game of cat and mouse? Then maybe it's time to hire a fiduciary. What's a fiduciary? That's a financial professional who puts the needs of his clients ahead of his own. Being a fiduciary also means that the advisor should recommend the products and services he believes will best serve his clients' needs, not what an insurance or investment company tells him he has to sell. So next time you're talking to an advisor, ask him, "Are you a fiduciary?" The answer should only be yes or no. If the advisor doesn't know, then the answer is probably no. This public service announcement has been brought to you by Holland Financial. We want to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back. Maddie Dykewall is on the line with me, co-founder and senior vice president of AgeWave. AgeWave.com is a website and the book, which we're going to talk about some of this as well today, How Women's Soaring Economic Power Will Transform Our World for the Better. That's the book by Maddie Dykewall. And Maddie, I want to get into this. You know, what are some of the things that have changed in society that is allowing and facilitating and accelerating, I think we would agree on, women's making significant workplace gains?
Yeah, this is a huge subject and one that's really near and dear to my heart. But I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that it wasn't that long ago
right. That
women, like our great-great-grandmothers, they couldn't even own property. In fact, they were considered property. They couldn't even open a bank account, let alone an investment account, and they couldn't even vote to change any of those things. So women really had a rough time of it until very recent history. And I mean, women weren't even encouraged to pursue higher education until the baby boom generation came along, basically in the 1960s. And that's when the first generation of women we saw enter college en masse, then enter the workplace en masse, and not just enter the workplace, but stay in the workplace and take on some positions of leadership. And that was a huge shift. I mean, I think it's education that has been the linchpin that have allowed women to prosper in the workplace. It's been rather amazing. And what's most amazing, David, and I don't necessarily think this is such a great thing, but what's happened is that today there's been a bit of a flip-flop. In fact, women are graduating from college in higher numbers than men right now. And the reason I say I don't think that's so great, I think I wish that men were graduating in equal numbers with women. I mean, I don't want women to succeed and men not to. I'd like women and men to stand side by side with equal opportunity for both.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I'm sure you've noticed this. We see more and more of the high-profile women CEOs.
That's
and
right.
It wasn't that long ago that you didn't see that.
Yeah, but there are. There's no question about that. But unfortunately, women have done a great job of getting to the middle place, middle management job.
Yeah.
The middle place. I mean, they do very well politically in very localized areas, but you get to the higher levels of both corporations and in the government, and then we're not doing so great.
Oh,
in
okay.
fact, we haven't done much better than we did back in the 1980s. When we made huge, huge inroads, so we got to about 18%, but, you know, women, we need to take that next leap. And I say we because I don't mean just women and men, because we have found for society and for women and men in relationships and for every single aspect of life, if women and men can both be succeeding, then that's progress. That's really moving in the right direction.
Agreed. So here's a context or putting it in some perspective with the gains we've seen for women, Maddie, in the United States. Do we see this? Is that representative of what's happening around the world? Are there other places where the gains have been stronger or more pronounced? And I suppose there's also possibly places where it's not nearly anywhere near the gains we've seen here.
Well, it has gotten better everywhere to a certain degree.
Okay.
In certain countries like the Scandinavian countries, women do equally as well as men. There's no, in fact, they do better than they do in this country. In fact, part of the reason is that in many other countries in the developed world, they have laws that make it easier for women and men to combine family and work responsibilities. And the Scandinavian countries are stars in that way. And the countries that do the best in terms of equal opportunity and equal wages and equal leadership capabilities for men and women are those countries that take the time to create the infrastructure that allows family and work to both happen at the same time. One of the people I interviewed for my book was former Secretary of Labor Robert Reich, and he told me two interesting things. He said, one, that in the next 10 years in the United States, the average woman will out-earn the average man, and two, the biggest barrier to women succeeding on the same level as men is that women want to have babies more than men do. And it's having those children that, you know, and caring for the children, not just having them, but caring for them and giving them the kind of childhood that they deserve and that will create great human beings for that next generation requires work. And it's often, no matter what anybody says, it's more often than not a woman who makes the career sacrifices over a man. She doesn't stop working anymore because we need those two incomes in families, but she makes career sacrifices.
Yeah, and not necessarily because she is forced to. You're speaking a little bit more so, Maddie, even to choice that's what she wants to do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, let me come full circle then, and you talk about really both members of the couple succeeding. What does that say, or how does that play into what they want to do, or how they make financial decisions together?
Well, that's a really good question. And, you know, one of the only good things about what happened in 2008 was that it changed family dynamics in some dramatic ways. Up until that point, in couples, even where men and women both work, more often than not, women would defer financial decisions to their husband or partner or spouse, whatever word we want to use that's politically correct. But come 2008, and a couple of two things happened. One is women said, wait a minute, I'm not going to lose all this money and not have a say in it. And number two, men said, wait a minute, I don't want to be responsible for making these huge decisions without you because it's too much of a responsibility. So what couples tell us, and we've done studies on this, 65% of couples say they want to share equally in making financial decisions. By the way, is this easier or more difficult? It's more difficult, but it's also, even though it's more challenging, it also brings better results.
I agree with all that, and I'll tell you what, it may be that it's a little more involved. Maybe it is a little more difficult for the couple, but I can tell you what, from my experience working with couples, it's very often the process will put them more on the same page than they were when they started, and they will have that mutual understanding, and they can blend together what each of them wants and what they feel comfortable with. And that can be done with a plan for both of them, which is kind of interesting because you think that by putting it together that there is a fundamental expectation of compromise, but there it doesn't have to be that they both, you know, with compromise, neither party gets what they really want, right?
Yeah.
But they can actually both win or both get what they're looking for as part of an overall plan. And for me to try to plan, Maddie, for somebody where I don't have both members of the couple there, regardless of the type of couple it is, it's very difficult. And so it's so much easier from a financial planner or planning standpoint when both are engaged and involved.
Yeah, I could, by the way, instead of compromise, I think of it as collaboration.
There you go.
And I think collaboration is a great word. And it's one, by the way, that resonates very much with women, and it's starting to catch on very much with men. And I think it's difficult. And this is a place where a financial advisor can actually, I'm not suggesting there aren't other places they could be helpful, but this is a place where they can be extremely helpful.
Amen to that. Well, we'll have to leave it there, Maddie. We'll have you back. Maddie Dykewald, ladies and gentlemen, co-founder and senior vice president of AgeWave, AgeWave.com, and the book, How Women's Soaring Economic Power Will Transform Our World for the Better. Maddie, thank you so much for being with me.
No, thank you. It's been fun.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.